I was arrested today noon when reporting to Central Police Station at about 1 p.m. today.
One of Hong Kong's highest profile protesters talks about his arrest. This is Friday, September 25th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, North Korea kills a South Korean official, raising the level of tension in the region. The U.S. president refuses to commit to a peaceful transfer of power if he loses the election. And isolation grows as a symptom of the COVID-19 pandemic. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Hong Kong activist Joshua Wong issued a video statement Thursday after being released on police bail following his arrest for participating in an unauthorized assembly in October 2019 and violating the city's anti-mask law.
I was arrested today noon when reporting to Central Police Station at about 1 p.m. today. And the arrest is related to participating in an unauthorized assembly on 5th of October on 2019. And also I received another charges of violating the draconian anti-mask law as well. And those police officers just arrest me and prosecute me suddenly without any notification and update.
Wong's latest arrest adds to several unlawful assembly charges or suspected offenses he and other activists are facing related to last year's pro-democracy protest, which prompted Beijing to impose a sweeping national security law on June 30th. In a video handout, Wong laid out the many court cases he's currently facing and vowed to continue to persevere with his activism.
Even facing the maximum penalties of 5 years in jail related to the unauthorized assembly and 1 year in jail of wearing a mask that violates on the anti-mask law, I have no regret at all because the threats can't defeat us, make us even stronger determination. And even I might be a bit tired under the cross-examination and also the videotaping interview inside the police station being questioned by those police sergeant and officers. I still realize that that's my responsibility, duty, and mission. Let the voice of Hong Kongers being heard. And that's the reason for me continue the fight. And I realize there's no reason for us to give up.
Wong, who is now 23, was just 17 years old when he became the face of the 2014 student-led umbrella movement democracy protest, but he was not a leading figure of the often violent unrest that shook the semi-autonomous former British colony last year. An anti-mask law was introduced last year in a bid to help police identify the protesters they suspected of committing crimes, and it's facing a challenge in court. In the meantime, the Hong Kong government has made face masks mandatory in most circumstances due to the coronavirus pandemic. China's security law, which was imposed in late June, was designed to stamp out the demonstrations and target acts deemed to be secession, subversion, terrorism, and foreign collusion. Beijing has described it as a sword hanging over the heads of its opponents as it pushes to return stability. Critics say it's blanketed the city in fear, and UN rights experts warn its broad wording poses a serious risk to Hong Kong's freedom. VOA Asia continues. North Korea shot, killed, and immediately cremated a South Korean civilian official who went missing earlier this week near the two countries' disputed Western Sea border. That according to South Korea's military. As VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul, the incident is likely to further hurt inter-Korean relations.
On Wednesday, South Korean officials announced a civilian working for the Ministry of Oceans and Fisheries disappeared near the sea border with North Korea. A day later, the grisly details began to emerge. Seoul's military says the man was found by North Korean officials at sea. They questioned him, shot him to death, doused his body with oil, and set him on fire, apparently all on orders from a superior.
우리 군은 북한의 이러한 만행을 강력히 규탄하고
At a press briefing, South Korean General Ahn Young-ho said Seoul strongly condemns the atrocity and demands North Korea provide explanations and punish those responsible. The 47-year-old disappeared Monday while on duty aboard a patrol boat off the South Korean border island of Yeonpyeong. He was reported missing about 10 kilometers south of the de facto inter-Korean sea border. The circumstances of the man's disappearance are not clear. South Korean military officials believe he may have been trying to flee to North Korea. Local reports say he was struggling with debt and recently divorced. Inter-Korean border crossings are always dangerous, but even more so during the coronavirus pandemic. The U.S. military says North Korea has issued shoot-to-kill orders to prevent the coronavirus from entering the country from China. Yong Mu Jin, a professor at the University of North Korean Studies in Seoul, says North Korea is locked down, almost as in a wartime situation, to prevent COVID-19 outbreaks. He says for now, resuming dialogue with North Korea is the most important thing. The shooting incident is awkwardly timed for South Korean President Moon Jae-in, who this week renewed his call for an end-of-war declaration with the North. The left-leaning Moon desperately wants to improve ties with Pyongyang before he leaves office in 2022. He's been trying to convince the North to return to the dialogue and cooperation that marked the beginning of his five-year term. The two countries have been in a technical state of war since their 1950s conflict ended in a truce and not a peace treaty. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. President Donald Trump Wednesday said he would not commit to a peaceful transfer of power if he loses the election, and again questioned the legitimacy of the expected increase in mail-in voting due to the coronavirus pandemic. Recent polling indicates that significantly more Democrats plan to vote by mail than Republicans. VOA's Brian Patton reports Trump's comments came as both parties prepare for the likelihood of a bitterly contested presidential election in November.
The partisan divide over mail-in voting could lead to what some pundits are calling a contested red mirage election. Under that scenario, President Trump might claim victory after securing an early lead on election night, but eventually lose to Democratic Party rival Joe Biden as absentee ballots are counted in the days that follow. Calling mail-in voting fraudulent and a scam, Trump predicts there could be legal challenges to the ballot count that would ultimately be decided by the Supreme Court. This is one reason he has cited for nominating a replacement to recently deceased liberal justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg before the election.
I think this will end up in the Supreme Court, and I think it's very important that we have nine justices.
Analysts note that while there is no evidence of widespread vote-by-mail fraud, as the president has alleged, these mail-in ballots do have a higher rejection rate, mostly because voters fail to fill them out properly. Also, as happened during this year's primary elections in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, some states experienced long delays in counting the surge of mail-in ballots. Hans von Spakovsky is a former federal election commissioner now at the Heritage Foundation.
The more you encourage people to vote by mail, the larger the number of people who will be disenfranchised and their votes aren't going to count.
The Supreme Court's role in all of this, if any, remains to be seen. Sam Berger is a political analyst at the Center for American Progress.
Hopefully we won't be in a situation in which we're asking justices to rule on a case that will decide the outcome of the election. I think that would be very problematic for democracy.
In the closely contested 2000 presidential election, the Supreme Court ruled on a vote recount dispute in Florida that essentially provided Republican George W. Bush a victory over former Democratic Vice President Al Gore by one electoral vote. Gore then conceded, saying it was for the good of the country, despite winning the overall popular vote. President Trump, when asked Wednesday if he would commit to a peaceful transfer of power if he loses the election, said only we are going to see what happens. With partisan tensions so high, both sides fear a bitterly contested election could spark political clashes between right-wing militias and radical leftists. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
Australian bank Westpac has agreed to pay a record fine for the nation's biggest breach of anti-money laundering laws. The case was brought by the government's Australian Transaction Reports and Analysis Center, known as AUSTRAC. It said the penalty of more than $900 million sent a strong message to the financial industry to take compliance seriously. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
Westpac was accused by government investigators of 23 million breaches of money laundering and counter-terrorism financing laws. Australia's second largest bank was found to have allowed transactions that were potentially linked to child exploitation in the Philippines and in other countries, despite being specifically warned of the risks. If approved by the federal court, the $920 million fine will be easily the biggest in Australian corporate history. The bank had set aside $630 million to pay the penalty, but that figure was rejected as insufficient by the financial crimes watchdog. AUSTRAC investigators said the bank's non-compliance was serious and systemic. Australian Attorney General Christian Porter said he believes the agreed-to settlement, which he described using the Australian dollar amount, is fair.
My very strong view and the government's strident view was that the early appropriations that Westpac made and the figures that were being put early in negotiations with AUSTRAC were totally inadequate, and that this $1.3 billion amount more properly reflects both the seriousness of the offending that Westpac had engaged in, but also an acceptance of the fact that these represent some of the greatest failures of a corporate entity in Australia's history to abide by Australian law.
Westpac has apologised for its failings. Chief Executive Peter King said the bank was committed to fixing the issues to ensure that these mistakes don't happen again. The bank's former chief executive and chairman left their positions last year over the scandal. Opposition politicians are demanding the government push ahead with reforms to further strengthen Australia's anti-money laundering legislation. Last year, Australia's banking industry was scrutinised by a royal commission, the highest form of public inquiry, that exposed widespread dishonesty in the sector. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The coronavirus pandemic has killed at least 978,000 people since the outbreak emerged in China last December. The United States is the worst-hit country, with almost 202,000 deaths. After the U.S., the hardest-hit countries are Brazil, India, Mexico, and the United Kingdom. China, excluding Hong Kong and Macau, has to date declared over 85,000 cases, including 4,634 deaths and 80,513 recoveries. Of all the changes the COVID pandemic has forced on the world, the sense of isolation can be one of the most challenging. And it turns out that according to psychologists who study the effects of isolation on mental health, all that social distancing has literally made us socially distant. Ostap Yarosh has the story, narrated by Anna Royce.
Psychiatrists say the COVID pandemic and the focus on social distancing has made us all a bit more lonely and a bit more awkward around other people.
I would like to emphasize the consequences of isolation and loneliness the most, because it is, no doubt, an extremely important factor that affects both physical and mental health. People who spend a long time in isolation, like prisons or hospitals or Antarctica, if you will, definitely lose certain social skills. And the longer they stay, the more they lose.
Markiyan Prohasko spent almost 2 months in Antarctica. He went there in early 2019 to write a book about the experience of being at a polar station. Later, during quarantine, Markiyan often drew parallels with his time at the South Pole.
When you're staying at home, sometimes you don't even want to see anyone, but you can always do so. But when circumstances force you to stay at home, you suddenly feel a certain constraint. You can't go anywhere, although you would like to. In Antarctica, it's the same.
After returning from the expedition, it took some time for Markiyan to adapt to normal life.
When I returned, on the one hand, I wanted to lie low for a few weeks, not to communicate with anyone, maybe only with the loved ones. What can I say? How can I explain it all? On the other hand, many of the things that are common here seemed pointless for a while. I went outside, people were going somewhere. What were they doing?
Experts say there is little doubt people will lose certain social skills during the pandemic. Just as muscles atrophy without exercise, communication skills suffer from isolation. That's why it's important to take care of your mental health. Sooner or later, the pandemic will come to an end, and the hope is that the world can get rid of the distance and just get back to being social. For Ostap Yarosh in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy the day ahead.